Welcome to Becoming Your Greatest Possible Self. I am Chris Burns, America's number one motivational speaker for fiery inspiration and GPS coach for entrepreneurs and high achievers. Each episode, we interview leaders and great role models who make a massive impact in the world to help you master yourself, take courageous action, and make every day your best day ever. For our review of the week, we have Jay Barshop. And Jay says, Chris and his guests provide some incredibly actionable and compelling content, spotlighting the best tactics and insights on how to become the very best version of yourself and live a more productive, well-rounded life. Highly recommend listening and subscribing to Becoming Your Greatest Possible Self if you want the knowledge and mindsets to grow into the person you know you're capable of becoming and reach your overall goals as a result. So Jay, thanks so much for leaving that review, and we do shout one person, one review out every single week. So if that's you, definitely we will shout you out. Leave us a review on www.beyourgps.com/iTunes, or find us in iTunes and leave us a review, and we will make that happen. And now we're going to introduce the legendary Shannon Ray. Shannon Ray is the highly sought after speaker and author of The Four Principles of Power, Living in the I Am, and the I Am Powerful Program. A powerful leadership coach and business consultant, she also owns four successful companies of her own, building $100 million in revenue companies. She takes eight out of nine startups to sale, scale, or profit, traversing 17 industries in 23 years. As a survivor of attempted murder and complex multiple trauma herself, she works with clients as diverse as C-level executives in global brands to homeless female survivors of trauma and addiction. A driven, results junkie, and liberated soul, Shannon Ray gives her clients the tools they need to liberate everything from results to relationships. Shannon, you ready to crush this? She's ready. Awesome, awesome. Well, you are now live on Becoming Your Greatest Possible Self. Thank you so much for joining us today and making this happen. It was last minute, and she's like, yes, I'm going to jump into the flow and jump in this interview.
Got it.
Awesome. Awesome, awesome. Well, we're going to dive right into the question of the day, which is about the art of being. So, Shannon, how does this art of being show up for you? How is that a principle that shows up in your life, your business, and what you're all about?
You know, it's about daily walking meditation. I focus every day from the time I wake up to the time I go to sleep. I'm really just being so mindful in every moment. It's like, you know, a lot of people think of meditation as sitting on a chair, lotus position, you know, hands kind of in a certain position. And for me, it's more about a moment-to-moment practice of being mindful and present, you know, in every minute. So it's a practice, by the way. It requires you to seriously just pause about once an hour and ask yourself, am I being present? Am I here? Where am I at? What am I doing? Sometimes it's just touching your skin and saying everything.
So I'm curious, did you always have that perspective of presence? Because, you know, usually if you're an entrepreneur building businesses, driving, it's really hard to sit still and harness that gift of presence and stillness.
Absolutely not. I would say in my early 20s, I used to do yoga every single day and meditate all the time. Mm-hmm. And I lacked more presence then than I have today. Mm. And again, I think it's because, you know, you think it's a moment in time. Like if I just go do yoga for an hour a day or a couple times a week, or if I meditate on a daily basis, I'm going to maintain that presence. And then what we do is we get up off that, you know, that little cushion. Mm-hmm. We go into our days and we drive forward, and we forget what it's about. It's not about, you know, that hour long meditation. But, you know, I think it took me living through my trauma and giving, you know, having life bring me to my knees for me to really stop and say, wait a minute, like every minute matters, but it takes almost losing your, you know, your last breath to sometimes do that, or at least it did for me anyway.
For you. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So we're going to get there in a second. And before we jump there, I do want to hear a little bit more and for the audience to know a little bit more about you, your businesses that you're working on today. Cause you're like just a dynamic leader, powerhouse, and also owning the feminine and nurturing the women around you. So share a little bit more about what you're doing today.
So, you know, I'm pretty immersed right now in a startup technology client. Startups are a fun little addiction of mine. It's like, you get to like do these massive drives in short periods of time with like very little resources. So they're super exciting. I've got a company that's manufacturing modules in the IoT space, which I never thought I would be in, but it's a lot of fun. Super exciting. I just actually closed down a business. A local business that I had here. So always something fun going on around here.
Awesome. Awesome. So you're crushing it in business, working with startups, all kinds of cool stuff. So let's go back a little bit to the journey. What were those challenging moments? You mentioned you almost lost your life. Take us back there and just let us know what happened and the wisdom that you gained from it, how you persevered.
So, you know, I never would have thought I'd have ended up in that situation. I share with people all the time. I have every what we like to call protective factor and privilege on the planet. Mm-hmm. Well, some might say being a woman is not necessarily privilege, although I'd argue that a little bit sometimes. but really, I was well educated at the time. I had a very successful consulting business, just like I do today. Yeah. You know, it's doing startup technology companies in Southern California. Mm-hmm. I lived like blocks from the ocean. You could smell the salt water in the air. I mean, I was living the dream. 2.5 kids, a white picket fence, you know, everything that would keep you out of challenges in your life, right? Everything that defines success on an external factor. I would also say that I was super, you know, happy. I wasn't, you know, frustrated with life. I didn't have challenges that I was trying to overcome. I wasn't, you know, feeling self-loathing or any of those kinds of dynamics. But I just happened to marry a man who suffers mental health issues and self-medicated with drugs and alcohol. And at the time, at this particular time in my life, he started smoking a gram of crystal a day.
Wow.
Having two kids was a little bit overwhelming for him. Married to a type A driven woman, when he needed a little bit more peace and calm and, you know, a little less drive in his life. And it was that perfect storm that took us to a place where, you know, I just, you know, we lived through domestic violence and rape, and we lost a child, and almost lost my life at the hands of a little bit of a rageful night that he had coming down from his drug addiction. And yet life just takes you to this place where you kind of step back and go, something's happening here. Mm-hmm. You know, what is this pattern that is happening that causes me to be in this situation? And I woke up one day saying, well, one of two things is either true, Chris. Either my life philosophy that everything in life is a reflection of you is completely wrong, or this is a real reflection of me. And I like to say that I'm glad I had enough ego left at the time to say, well, I'm obviously not wrong. Like, I can't be wrong. So, unfortunately, that means this is a mere reflection of me. And well, you know, he didn't live life in the same way I did. You know, he took out his self-loathing, I would say, or his lack of power on others.
Yeah.
But what I really learned when I had to kind of swallow that and literally vomit, by the way, that morning when I woke up, I had to ask myself, where is this a reflection of me and how do I own this?
Right.
And it truly brought me to my knees to say, oh, wow, like I have to own a piece of this. What's this pattern that keeps repeating in my life that kind of causes these challenges to come up? And it's what led me down the path that I'm on today. And you know, created programs that really help people understand the difference between power and control. We teach people about power or about control all day long. We don't necessarily teach people how to practice power in their lives every day.
Wow. So let's start off defining these terms, because to someone who doesn't know the difference, they might seem, well, it's the same.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's interesting that the best example I always like to give people when they say, I don't control, like nobody wants to be a control freak. Nobody wants to say, I'm a leader who controls. But the best way to figure it out or to understand the difference is anytime you're in what I like to call a below the line emotion. So anytime you're impatient, anybody ever driven on a freeway and been a little impatient being cut off on the road. Mm-hmm. Impatient because we are not getting the results we want in the time frame we want. If we've ever had a team member who just isn't delivering something in the way that we want it to be delivered. All of those are examples of control showing up for us. Mm-hmm. Something not happening in the time we want, in the way we want, in the factors that we want, all of those things. Anytime we get frustrated, anytime we get irritated, anytime we get angry, we're practicing control. So control is what I like to call an external force, and power is an internal source. So that time in life when you feel like things are coming at you, that's an external force. Yeah. Power is an internal source. So it's an internal choice that we make that kind of ripples out from us.
Wow. So it's the power is a sense of fulfillment. It gives us energy versus control. It's like it's manipulation. It's like I gotta exert force on things around me, which steals our energy or takes our energy.
Absolutely. Control will limit everything you touch. Power will liberate everything you touch. So if you want to free something up, if you want to create space, if you want to create momentum, if you want to create connection or an organic kind of self-perpetuating viral effect to your results, to your relationships, you've got to practice the principles of power. But what we likely do, or even socially or socialized to do, are practice the principles of control. We actually do the opposite. You know, we always say, oh, I need to get control of this. I feel out of control. I got to get the control back. Yeah. But ironically, it ends up choking the life out of everything that we do and limits us. And it might look like success for a minute, but it's kind of like that spaghetti you throw at the wall. It'll stick for a little bit, for a minute, but it's not really going to be there on a consistent basis. So the facade of mediocrity.
Wow. So when we get this access to using power in a healthy way, you know, power that empowers us, because there could also, I'm sure, can there be an abuse of power? Or if there's an abuse of power, is it control? Does it turn into control?
So, you know, I think it depends on our language, but what I like to encourage people to do is to start using the difference between power and control as not the same thing. We often think of power and control as one thing, right? But I want people to start thinking of power as that internal source. And so the power can never be taken away from you. You were inherently born with all the power you're going to have. I often tell people you're as powerful today as you're ever going to be. How's that feel?
It feels great. Like unlimited. Yes.
But you know, interestingly enough, Chris, to a lot of people, it feels limiting. They're like, what do you mean I'm all I need to be? I want to be better. I want to be more. I want to have, you know, bigger, better, faster, more. And I think that's an addiction we have in our society, right? We want to be more than what we are today when we can't build on a solid foundation in that matter.
And it's like, wait, Shannon, you just told me I'm like my infinite potential that I know I'm capable of, but I've been believing I've been smaller this whole time and I need to become more. Oh, shit.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because self-development, right? Yeah. Any self-development, leadership development tells us we need to start doing something or stop doing something. We need to become something. We need to do something or not do something. We should be this. We shouldn't be that. We get caught in the cycle of not enough. And unfortunately, instead of actually building or growing or enhancing, we actually dig holes and we become less over and over and over again. And we get in this downward spiral thinking and really feeling we're doing the right thing. Wow. We're growing, right? Instead of actually just, it's just like when I do work with companies and organizations or consulting, what a lot of them think they need to do is add something or become more complex. Like they don't have enough people, they don't have enough systems, they don't have enough, you know, knowledge capital, when ironically what they need to do is slim back and just get simple and get back to the heart of what they're really there to do. And that's the truth for people too. If you just stop and look yourself in the mirror and say, I already am all I need to be right where I am, and then add on to that if you choose to, and from a place of choice, then you've engaged in power. But when you come from a place of I should do it, or I have to do it, I need to do it, I'm not enough, you're operating from a place of control. It's a place of scarcity.
Do you find that that men or women have this, either one have more or less often? Is there a difference?
There isn't a difference, but you want to know something that is interesting.
Yes.
Because the other question I often get is it people who are struggling more or people who are striving more? And interestingly enough, struggling and surviving is the same as striving and driving. They're two different poles, but they're both the practice of control. Both of them feel like they are not where they need to be. This whole concept you're talking about, you know, the art of being, is one of our four principles of power. It's the art of presence, right? It's that, am I in the present moment?
Yeah.
It's one of the four principles of power. And if you can be in that moment which is to really let go of the past, which is that struggling and surviving, right? I'm so concerned about running from where I was, but also stop striving and driving and be so concerned about where you're not and destination living. You can kind of access that presence. And without that, you can't have any power.
Wow.
And so men and women do it all the same. Successful people do it as much as those who, you know, my CEOs who drive their Mercedes to their house on the hills are no different than my women who are living in shelters, you know, riding the bus. They're really no different.
Wow. So what can we start to look for? I know you mentioned like resistance earlier, frustration. That's something that we can look for. If things are working smoothly in our business and we're comfortable, does that mean that we are in control or does that mean that we are empowered?
So, you know, the indicators you want to look for are, like I said, impatience. Mm-hmm. So if you're impatient about where you're not at, what you're really saying is I'm not comfortable with where I'm at. I'm not happy with where I'm at. It's that level of presence. Anytime you feel like you don't have a choice, you know, those four principles are choice, ownership, equality, and presence.
Okay. So
anytime I feel unequal to someone, I feel more than or less than someone, that's an indicator you're operating in control and you're likely more limited than you can imagine. Or you're limiting yourself. Anytime that you're focused on the present or the past and not operating in the present, you're operating from a place of control and you're limited. You might have extraordinary results in your company, but if you're operating from those principles, you're limiting even what you could do. So you might be making $100 million, but you could be making $500 million if you just activated those principles. So anytime that you think you're supposed to be somewhere other than you should be, or you are, we're using words like I should or I have to. Those are language, you know, words you can watch for or identify whether you're practicing power or control. Language is a really powerful indicator.
Yeah, I love it. Because it's perspective, right? The language is like a reflection of your mind state, reflection of your energy and how you're showing up in that whole energy of the place.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love it. So when you're working with these big companies, what's the first thing you do to like immediately start assessing or understanding where they're at and then putting them on like a path to action, so to speak?
You know, it's interesting, but the first question I always ask people is identifying who they think they are. Like, what do you really think that you're in? Because again, so many people get lost in adding things or becoming more than what they are. And it's really about getting down to that simplicity. For example, my current technology client, they're a module manufacturer. They're not a platform provider. They're not a service provider. They're really just a module manufacturer. And when they simplistically focus on being a module manufacturer, and the position they are in the marketplace of the industry and drive straight forward to that end goal, it's much easier for us to build infrastructure that does that. And until we understand who we are, where we want to go, and why we're there, it's very hard to build infrastructure around. You end up building things that are unnecessary. They end up being highly costly. You end up outpricing yourself in the marketplace and not pricing yourself well, going after the wrong market with the wrong product. So reputation is the most important thing.
Wow. So it's like, who do you think you are? Getting back to the roots of the purpose. Like, why did you start this company? Who do you want to be for your customers? Who are you for yourselves? That kind of thing. And you look at what is in alignment with that, what they say. And then, like, I'm sure you look at like every corner of the business, like what is in alignment with that and what isn't. And then you start like going to work. How do you introduce the principles? At what point does that happen? And how does that work?
You know, I actually very rarely talk about them. Because again, it's really much more of a practice. I don't even need you to necessarily know what you're doing as much as I need you to just start operating. One of the biggest things we do in businesses is focus on accountability. So once you know who we are and what we're doing and where we're going, the second step is to really identify how we're going to measure those. So what results are we really going to measure success on? Once I know that second step of what we're measuring and how we're measuring it, the next step is to really rally the team around it and get their buy-in. The single most critical step in an organization, there isn't an organization in 23 years that I have worked with that we have not had to address accountability. Because what happens is most people feel like the results they're not getting is because of something or someone other than themselves. So first and foremost, it's never that. You know, you're not where you need to be. You know, the first thing I would say is you need to own it. It's one of our four principles of power is you have to own where you are. So my first step is to do that with the owner, the CEO of the company. because if they're not where they need to be, it's because that leader is not taking ownership for where they're at. I always like to say, if it lives in your team, if it lives in your results, if it lives in your home, like frankly, if it sleeps in the bed next to you, Chris, it's because it lives in you.
Yes.
There's no, like, you will only gain as much power as you're willing to take ownership of.
How do you know if you've taken ownership or not?
Well, my first question is, if you're frustrated with something, you feel like you're missing something, you think there are more results in there, you're not taking enough ownership. Your results will equal your ownership. You will feel peace, power, passion, purpose, and you'll experience profit when you have full and complete ownership over what's going on. That means that every challenge you have, every outcome you have or don't have, every person on your team, the place you are, the place you're not at, you need to legitimately own every single ounce of that.
All right, we're live again with Shannon Ray. She's bringing the heat. She's spitting so much fire. It's like fuming the technology. Oh my gosh. I thought you were working with technology companies. This is your thing, Shannon. What happened?
I know.
I love it. So we were just talking about the power of choice. When we choose, it really can shift our entire reality. So I want to go back to the accountability part because that's super powerful. Like, what is it that we can start doing to notice if we're like accountable in the right areas, to notice if we're tracking the right metrics, the right statistics, and we're focused on the accountability of the right things?
So, you know, it's interesting the way you phrase that question, because your focus is on what we're measuring, right? Like, are we tracking the right things? And for me, it's less about what you're tracking and more about how your action, I guess, the kind of action you're taking on accountability. Let me give you an example. What we often do is think of accountability as an expectation. So let's say as a leader, I expect this result from you. I make a request of you. You literally not necessarily make a choice because you want to keep your job. You've got to get your work.
Right?
So it becomes a deliverable that you're expected to achieve. And that's how we think of accountability. And so what often happens is that we don't learn to make agreements with people when we talk about accountability. We teach what's called agreement-based accountability, which is how do I sit down with you and I as equals, whether I'm the leader or you're the leader, who reports to one another, and really understand that we are partners. We're equals in the process. Like, I report to you, you report to me. You got to manage up as well as you got to manage down. And the truth of the matter is real brilliance, real innovation comes when we are both engaged from a place of choice. Because if I'm not making a true choice, and by the way, compliance is very different than choice.
You know, totally.
We get compliance, but that's not commitment. Choice equals commitment. I might say yes, but you got my compliance. It's really critical for a leader to understand the difference between commitment and compliance, which is giving an employee or a team member a choice and treating them like an equal than it is having an expectation. And what happened, the reason why that's so important, it's so much more important than actually what you're measuring. You don't even have to be measuring the right thing. But if you and I partner together, when we have a mutual respect for one another, and I get to make a choice, you get to make a choice, all of a sudden we end up mashing it up in this way where our brilliance, our inner genius comes out, and innovation happens, and creativity happens, and things that you would have never imagined occurring kind of come out of that magic. And there's a synergy that gets created when you do that in a team, when you do that in a department, and then when you do that on an organizational level. All of a sudden, this fire feels like it gets lit in your organization. What you thought you were doing, what you thought you should be measuring, completely changes because that creative, innovative genius kind of gets sparked in the team. And I mean, ideas come out of there, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
Now, granted, you still need to have a structure for how you measure things and be able to articulate those things, but far more important is making an agreement for what we call.
Wow. So, would you consider yourself entrepreneurial?
Absolutely.
Okay. I'm curious how you found the entrepreneurial spirit in you and dynamic work with corporations. Do you feel like there was ever any challenge in that blend, or did you feel like I were great and entrepreneurial and kind of innovative towards like pushing the envelope kind of mindset, and then the corporation is kind of like, okay, I get the bureaucracy and like I'll do what works within the framework. Like, was that ever an issue for you?
So I'm very mindful, by the way, of who I choose as clients. So I'm specific about saying that I work with progressive organizations. By that is, you absolutely, I don't care what size you are. I don't care if you're making $100 million or you just raised your first $1 million. You've got to have a couple attributes for me to be willing to work with you. And one of those is an entrepreneurial spirit. You've got to be able to think out of the box. You've got to be able to drive towards new innovation. You've got to be able to understand that your people are the avenue in which you're going to get there. You've got to be able to break rules within a structure. So I also don't like to work with renegades that are completely out of, you know, no structure, no line, maybe not over the place. You know, so it's got to be, I do love working with corporations. I do love working with companies. There's a lot of amazing both, you know, global brands that are Fortune 100 companies that are extraordinarily innovative, that are very focused on their people and their culture. And the combination of those two things create an innovative, you know, exciting environment to be. That's a critical combination for me. Probably has a lot to do with the fact that I couldn't function outside of an operation life. But yeah, I require it. But by the way, you wouldn't contact me unless you are in an entrepreneurial moment. You know, and what I say mean by that is, you might not be in an entrepreneurial organization, but you might be in an entrepreneurial moment. You might be at a time in your organization where you're ready to scale, you're ready to grow at a rapid pace, and you just, or you're launching a new division, or you're emerging, or being acquired, or you're acquiring another organization, and that requires some entrepreneurial spirit in the way that you approach it. You may only last for the 6 to 24 months I'm there, and we kind of get you through that time zone, but yeah, I can't work with an organization that isn't entrepreneurial. And there are organizations out there, Chris, that I would even say don't need to be entrepreneurial. They're clear about who they are. They're extraordinary about executing it. They've got a strong structure and infrastructure. They've got the right people in the right places, and they're good. They're really good at being where they are. They have a strong, steady growth trajectory, and they're okay with that. They don't need to be entrepreneurial. There's no need to break something apart and recreate and innovate, you know, in industries and sectors and companies that really don't need it. And that's okay.
What would you say it takes? Because I know we have a lot of coaches who listen to this show as well. What does it take to go from coaching, you know, 6 and 7 figure business owners and entrepreneurs all the way to working with $100 million companies?
You know, in some ways they're a lot alike, and in some ways they're drastically. they just are. You know, what it takes to be $1 million company and a $10 million company is a big difference.
Right.
A lot of it comes down for me to scale. Working with a $100 million company, you have to understand how to scale something because that's where they're at. Quite frankly, going from $10 million to $100 million is the same conversation. And going from $100 million to $500 million is really about scale. It's about finesse. It's about the minute details. You don't make huge shifts, by the way, at $100 million. You'd think we would make big shifts to make big growth, right?
Right.
But it's actually in the nuances. It's very small things that we make shifts in, but we need to make them in a way, in a manner that we can scale up. So it's a lot more about how do you scale that innovation. You're not doing much differently. I mean, I'm having the same conversations. The CEOs are grappling with the same stuff. We all put our pants on the same way. It doesn't matter if making $1 million or $100 million. They have the same fears and concerns. Quite frankly, their team members are doing the same shit that they were doing when they were making $1 million. It is, you know, the systems are the same, the infrastructure. It's about scale. And scale isn't about big shifts or big changes. They're about minor changes that you scale and are able to replicate and repeat massively. And really, that is about having the right people in the right place that know how to replicate and push that down. It's why communication becomes a critical component. It's why automation becomes one of the number one things that I look at. It's why strength-based approaches to leadership, how do you leverage your assets and then scale those assets out, becomes another part of our critical conversation. Those are the conversations I'm having with $100 million company. I'm having them with $1 million company or my startup company client that I have right now. But we can't scale. We're not getting there. We're building. We're starting. Right. Putting the right people to start that, you know, process. We're having a conversation about pricing, about business model. It's the basics, the core that you're having a conversation with. But at $100 million, you're talking about scale. You're talking about nuance. That VP becomes drastically critical to have the right person at the right place. Where just a little bit of a problem or a challenge at another level.
Would you say that it's mostly internally focused in growing the company, or can it be also or as often the pricing and offerings externally?
I think it's both. I think they're inextricably linked. You can't have a conversation about one without the other. I'm always having a conversation about your identity, which is really your brand. You know, how do you define yourself? What is your brand personality? I talk about a $100 million organization the same way I talk to an individual executive. It's the same conversation. An organization is an entity or an organism. It's just a collective of many, many, many people that create one personality, one message, you know, one conversation, all of those things. So, you know, I mean, I can't have a conversation about your internal infrastructure unless I know what your brand message is, what your personality is, what your message to the world is, who your market is, what your positioning is, what your pricing is, how you're delivering that pricing. Because I can't build a delivery mechanism on the inside until I know what we're delivering to whom and how and what we're saying in order to deliver that. What bridges and mechanisms are we using to do that? So that, it's an internal conversation and external. And it's a little bit of a chicken and the egg, kind of have both of them at the same time.
So. Yeah, awesome. In terms of like the arms, so to speak, or functions of a business, you know, $1 million to $100 million business, does anything, like, I know the scale changes in one to another. I'm curious in like pinpointing a problem, you know, do you have the same framework in kind of looking at, okay, marketing, sales, you know, administration, do you have the same framework of looking through those to find the problem? I know you start with the identity and stuff, but how do you, is it different for either one?
No, that's exactly the same. And in fact, $100 million companies are easier to work with.
Really?
Oh yeah. They pay better. Obviously, because I have the resources, they take you less time, and a heck of a lot easier. And the truth of the matter is that's because they've been through so many problems already, and they're not struggling. They're not like in the survival mode where they're trying to figure things out. They're not struggling for budget. They're not struggling for people. They're not struggling for market share. So they're freed of some of those things, and they're able to kind of just go to execution. But yeah, I mean, I always look for the same thing. So I look for, what are the roadblocks? What is, it's almost like a river, and it's just visually how I think about it. But I think of an organization as a flowing river, and I ask myself, what's blocking the flow right now? What are our roadblocks to success, both internal and external, because you have both. I look at what is siphoning out the river. Like, where are there holes that are siphoning out all of our assets? Any of our brilliance or our genius, whether that's in our product, whether that's in our customer base, whether that's in our messaging, whether that's in our process, our infrastructure, our people. You know, those are all the facets that I look at all at once. I also look at where are your leveragers? Like, there's a leverager in a business. Kind of like when you're closing a big, you know, decision maker deal that's going to take you 12 months to close. You're always looking for that champion, that one person who can drive it through the entire organization for you. The same thing when I look at an organization, I'm looking for that one element that's that leverager for them. Where are they excelling? Where is it just flowing so easily that I don't even have to do anything? It's creating magic. It might be a person. It might be a product. It might be a marketplace that they're in. It might be a way in, you know, a system or even a technology tool that they're using. It can be literally anything, but those are the three things that I search for throughout the organization. Once I've figured out those things, it's all about the people. You know, the truth of the matter is, I always look where there's a roadblock or where there's a siphon. It's almost always tied to an individual. If you've got an individual in the wrong role, I would like to say, if you put me in the accounting department, I would fail miserably. You'd be like, oh my God, please, you cannot work with this woman. Like, she's a nightmare. And it's just because that's not my strength, right? So often we put people in the wrong role for their strength. Sometimes we have people who just don't have conscious competency around what they're doing. Some people don't have the leadership skills. Now, I firmly believe anyone can be developed. But the question you have to ask yourself in business is the timing question. Can they get there in the time that we need them to, or is it going to cost us more? And so I might send someone to another position in another division in another area. We might drop them down. We might exit them. There's all kinds of things we can do. But in business, it's about timing. You have a certain amount of time to get a certain, you know, trajectory, or to, you know, head down your roadway. And sometimes a person too far behind to get you there. Hmm. Great people, totally going to get there for someone, but not going to get us there at the time we need. And we've got to make some tough decisions to remove, maybe shut down a division, maybe remove an individual, shut down a product line, change the pricing, maybe change our structure. That's usually my biggest challenge. What are the stakes of the organization? So once you go through that process,
Wow. So I love all these questions. It's just really cool talking to you. So in terms of lead generation, is it the same for you to generate leads at the $1 million level as the $100 million? Do you do it online? Do you do it at like networking events? Do you do it at, more like personal development events? Where do you find and how does it happen?
So you mean for my clients or for my clients?
For your clients, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a great idea. It's great, really great question. So my $100 million client, in fact, all of my clients that I've gotten in the last 23 years, I did no sales or marketing. I didn't do any online marketing. I probably could have had a much larger entity, by the way. Had I done this. Just to be frank.
Yeah.
However, every client I've gotten have come from one of two avenues. Either they came from a previous client. Someone knew me and knew what I did and said, oh my God, we've got to see what she did to my organization.
Mm.
And they learn what results I created for someone they know. And they say, can you create that for me? How do we do that in my company? I mean, I sell revenue, profits, and margins. Mm. In a down market, I'm worth it even more. So it's really not a hard sale. But what I have to do is be able to prove that I've done it before and then be able to answer for an entrepreneur or a business owner how I can specifically do it for them.
Mm.
So that's my number one way that I get them. My second way that I get it, ironically, is on a plane. Business travel for me, when I'm sitting on a plane and someone says, what do you do? And I say, I drive people's revenue, profits, and margins. So like, well, how do you do that? Well, depends on the company. Why would you ask? And they'll say, well, I said, what do you do? And they'll tell me what they do, and they'll tell me what their problem is, and I'll tell them, I ask a few standard questions. I mean, once you've been doing this for 23 years, the questions are really the same.
Yeah.
We ask a few questions, and their answers lead me to more questions, and soon enough, they're asking buying questions.
Mm.
How much does it cost?
Yep.
What does it take? How long would it take to do that? Where are you at? How would you do that? The number two, the top two reasons I get it. The third way that I sort of have gotten a few clients, it's not my number one strategy, but I pay attention to who's hiring.
Mm.
If they're on a hiring blitz, they're on a growth blitz, which means that they have growth challenges that I know what they're facing. And I'll often reach out and say, I see that you're growing. I see that you're hiring people. I grow businesses rapidly. I'd love to talk about how we might be able to partner with one another to bring greater value to each other.
Mm.
Usually sparks a conversation. 4 out of 5 of those would give me a call back. And I've never been in a business. I've had one client that I've done a pitch to in 23 years that said no, every other one that closed. So
what's that secret sauce?
But again, it's being mindful of what I sell. Because truthfully, Chris, everybody in business, the real problem they have and the real desire they have is growing their revenue. That's why we're in business.
Totally.
So again, revenue is super easy to sell at the end of the day. It's why it's an easy close. You have to be able to show that you've done it before.
Deliver, yeah.
You have to be able to sit down. It's not a short a sales cycle, by the way. I do have to sit down and I have a long conversation with people. I tend to do some investigation and assessment with my clients at no charge. I have no issue going in and saying, here's what I see happening. Here's what your greatest, obstacles to success are. If you did these 5 things in this manner, you're likely to hit that. And as soon as they understand that I know what I'm talking about, not only in general, but with their company, and I price it, by the way, in a way that, I put a little skin in the game. I'm willing to do that. Mind you, they pay me pretty heavily when I get results. But I'm willing to do that because I know I'm going to get the results. So, when you know that, when you feel confident because you've done it enough times and you have a formula for doing that, and I'm willing to put skin in the game and it costs them not as much unless they win.
Right.
Then they're willing to share that because they're not going to have it anyway. So why not give her a cut?
Yeah. That's awesome. I love it. I love it. You mentioned your range currently, and maybe this is not 100% correct, but like 1 million to 100 million. Do you see that an aspiration to work with like a $1 billion company? Is that something that you aspire to or want to do or are doing or have done?
You know, it actually, how much they make or what their revenue stream is matters very little to me. My last client that I just closed less than 6 months ago was about $150 million. They were a global nonprofit. They were phenomenal to work with. Super exciting. Again, for me, it's more about does your culture matter? Do your people matter? Are you really growing your people and investing in them? Do you see them as true human capital, as an asset in your organization, and take action to that? Are you innovative? Are you entrepreneurial? And am I excited and jazzed about what you're doing in the world? Like, I'm in a stage of my life where I get to say no to people. Like, no, I'm just not super excited about that. Like, how much money? My life is too precious at this point, Chris. Chris, my time is precious. I want to do things that I feel like matter in the world. You know, it's not about how much money I'm going to make. You know, I've been successful. I've gotten some extraordinary things. But I want to build organizations and entities that are impacting the world, that are furthering us as a, you know, as a humanity. And that's not always just on personal development or growth. I mean, sometimes that's some really cool technology or a really great nonprofit or an extraordinary brand. I loved working in the timeshare industry because they taught people how to take vacations and appreciate your life. It's a lot of things can do that. I just want to work with organizations that matter in the world and that are doing something cool. So I don't know that I have an aspiration to work with a $1 billion company. I mean, I'd be pretty freaking cool, but not so different again, like, you know, from working with a $100 million company at the end of the day.
Cool. I love it. In terms of your future projects, do you see any change or, you know, evolutions in the marketplace that you see changing where you focus your time and how much time you spend in what different places?
Yes, ironically, I'm changing my business model a little on my consulting side. I usually take one very full-time, very large client. And I don't mean large as in the size of their company. I mean the size of the scope of the work.
Right.
A couple smaller clients. And I've decided to kind of open it up a little bit and take close to 10 clients now on a bit of smaller scope, because the truth of the matter is, I think that companies feel like they need me more than they really do. You know, that they feel comfortable if they own a certain amount of my time,
right,
or if I'm around or available more, but I'm really not accomplishing more. And so I decided to sell that a little bit more from the front end than the back end. I usually tend to not sell that very hard from the front end, get into their organization and contract, and then show them they really don't need me as much as they thought they did.
Yeah.
I can accomplish the same results in less time. But decided to take a little bit of a change in it and take on more clients and spend less time with them and prove to them that they can get those same results without that time. We tend to buy time from people instead of results, which is always an interesting phenomenon to me.
Yep.
I always think you're going to get what you're going to buy. So if you want to buy somebody's time, that's what you're going to get.
From the bottom of my heart, thank you for tuning in. Right now, we've reached the end of this episode, but this is the start of a whole new beginning. Each and every moment, you have an opportunity to rewrite your story. Right here, right now, decide and commit who you are going to be. Think about how you will use these ideas, wisdom, and inspiration to make the difference in your life. What actions will you take today and every day to step into your greatest possible self? Again, a big shout out to our sponsor, EmployeeEscapePlan.com. If you're committed to learning how to truly harness your abilities and passions to serve the people who are hungry and desperate for what you have to offer, make a great income off of your genius, or if you're ready to get more clients to pay you more money, head over to www.employeeescapeplan.com and let Joe know you were sent by Chris. Did you enjoy this episode? Let your friends know about it. Share the website beyourgps.com and send me some love on social media. If you want to clarify your vision, uncover blind spots, get more energy, tap into your flow, and take massive action, head over to beyourgps.com/coaching to schedule some time into my calendar. Now, master yourself, create your reality, and make every day your best day ever.